From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at Acura.com/RDX.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining, I do.
Come over here, kid. Where's something? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday.
Coming up tonight on Mouthful, Vianna LaPlace returns with her new book, My Italian Garden, and some surprises, so stay tuned for the wine country's most delicious hour.
You're shoving all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Mashed potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn, you bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in, either now live as we're broadcasting from KRCB or on the web as a podcast on iTunes, npr.org, and krcb.org. Lots of ways to listen to Mouthful these days. And let's hope we keep them. There's a movement to save internet radio. If you're listening in that way, you might want to take a look at saveinternetradio.org. Some great guests this evening, and oh, you should smell the fragrances here in the studio. I am really happy to welcome back Vianna LaPlace. Has a new book out, My Italian Garden. Vianna is one of my favorite writers in the arena of food. Unplugged Kitchen is just a treasure to me, and you can tell because my copy's so beat up. There's also La Bella Cucina, Panini Bruschetta Crostini, and that's not even all. So we'll be catching up with Vianna on the new book. We're also talking to John Dykers of Be Happy Farms. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you.
And also an opera singer.
That's right.
And you're here with a composer, Erling Wold. Welcome, Erling.
It's good to be here.
So you guys are working on something together.
We are, yeah. We are working on a... Well, actually, this is... I sang a piece of Erling's about 4 years ago now called Sub Pontio Pilato, which about Pontius Pilate. And after that, we decided we wanted to actually collaborate and create something from scratch. So we are now working on a solo opera that we are calling Mordake, which is based, inspired by the story of Edward Mordake, which also inspired Tom Waits to write a song called Poor Edward.
Uh-huh.
So this is a solo piece, and it will have interactive video technology, which is perhaps a first for opera singers, I think. It's been used a lot in dance dance performances, but we have an interactive video artist from Nuremberg coming over named Frieder Weiss, who will be working with us in July for about 3 weeks to develop this imagery and get started. So we're having a kind of retreat at our farm with Erling. Here we have him come up and we lock him in a room.
Right, and they don't let me out except to feed me, which is great. You know, actually, the food's great.
Yeah, speaking of making something from scratch,
right.
You have what looks like fingerling and new red potatoes
yep.
on a bed of something green and leafy.
Yes, it's green and leafy, and it is a combination of red Russian kale and collards.
Oh.
And I sauteed, or sort of steamed sauteed them in garlic, which also comes from our farm. And there are three kinds of potatoes there. There's the red russets, I guess they're called, and fingerlings are what are called rose fin.
Oh, rose fin. I love rose fins.
And there's also some Yukon gold in there, I think, as well. So.
Well, feel free to dish up. Don't let me slow you down.
Let's do it. Okay.
So while you're dishing up, I'm going to have Vianna introduce her book. So it's My Italian Garden.
Yes.
And the garden is in San Francisco.
Yes, it is.
A place that a lot of people think would be tough to garden, but actually isn't tough.
Well, I did certain things that made it more possible to garden, to create an Italian garden in San Francisco, and then I was blessed with a site. And my garden is surrounded by rather tall retaining walls that hold a lot of heat, and they've been there. Here, let me pass that to you.
They've been
there for many, many, many years, so they look like old Roman walls.
Mm-hmm. And where in San Francisco is this located?
In Cow Hollow.
Okay.
So I'm not in a fog belt, but, you know, it's something that I do have to deal with. But I've had a lot. It was very, very interesting because I really wanted to stick with growing certain kinds of herbs and vegetables and attempting some fruits that are closest to my heart. I didn't want to just randomly plant things. So I did use some seed to get some greens, especially that were very, very regional. I mean, practically from specific towns in Italy. So that was quite interesting, very interesting.
Now, when did you start your garden?
Well, I started when two enormous trees that were in my neighbor's yard above were cut down because the trees were blocking a bay view, and all of a sudden my garden was flooded with light, whereas before it had been kind of
a black hole.
Yeah. Mm. So I just started digging and digging, and it was a process, really, of a couple of years to get it to bring in a lot of gravel and stone. I actually just roughed up the soil to have as much drainage as possible for the kinds of plants that I would want to plant.
Because now they're in Cow Hollow. You're just, let me get my directions right, you're just south of the bay fill that is the marina, right?
Yes, that's right. And you start going up the hill there.
So you're actually in original San Francisco soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the soil actually turned out to be good. Lots of Mediterranean plants really don't want you to add amendments to the soil to make it richer. It just works against the aromatic properties of them. So, you know, I did some reading and thinking and planning and dreaming, and I had more successes, and I wouldn't call the things that didn't work failures exactly, but because it was all interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It was all interesting. Mm-hmm. But my goal was to use what I was able to grow in the garden and cook from my garden.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So that had to be the focus, and it was very challenging and interesting and really called upon, you know, my creative energies.
Mm-hmm.
And also it just taps into the traditions of Italy or any other country that people eat what their climate can produce.
Right. Yeah. Now, you've been really inspired in the last number of years by Puglia.
Yes.
And you're talking Puglia. So is your, and Puglia in the boot, the heel of the boot of Italy.
The heel.
Is your garden inspired by Puglia?
Yeah. I missed it when I was in San Francisco, and I really think that was part of, you know, the creating the focus for the garden. I mean, it's a combination of the kinds of plants that I see when I when I've traveled in southern Italy, and my parents are from Sicily, and then just specific tastes that I couldn't get here, so I thought I would grow myself, that I did eat in Puglia.
Now, were you able to reproduce some of those tastes?
Absolutely. I was amazed, really. A lot of the chicories, for example, wild arugula, a number of things really worked well.
I want to bring you in right now, John, because you're farming up here in West County, as we call it.
Right.
Western Sebastopol.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'd call it a Mediterranean climate here necessarily in the West. Would you?
Oh, kind of, except that for the coastal fog that comes in.
Right. Because it's a former coastal rainforest.
Yeah.
Of course, the rainforest part was removed a long time ago.
Right. But we're able to grow pretty nearly everything, as I said, except for avocados, oranges, and grapefruits. And I should probably preface this by saying that the land actually belongs to Dan Smith, who is well-known. The French
software
garden.
Engineer, and now the French Garden, which I live walking distance from the French Garden, so
All
I
right.
know it well.
All right. Well, the farm that we have been working for the last we've been working for the last 5 years or so. Actually, now supplies 18 acres, and it supplies most of the produce. It goes directly to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Now, I first learned about you when I was doing a story for Summer Saver, the summer issue of Saver magazine.
Uh-huh.
I was doing the season section, and I was focusing on Karen Martin of K&L Bistro.
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about where the ingredients for every dish she was recommending, and she said, Be Happy Farms.
Uh-huh.
And I said, so tell me. So you do have some amount that you can sell to other places?
That could be the case. Actually, what happened is that last year, Dan had a restaurant in Berkeley called Le Théâtre, and they closed it down, I believe, the end of May. And then he was working on developing the French Garden. So there was a sort of a five-month gap.
Oh, a window
when everything
of opportunity.
Everything was in. And, and I had done some selling sporadically in the past. I mean, it pretty much has to do with when I don't have work, you know, otherwise. And I love working the soil and being outdoors. And this is a great opportunity. And basically what he said was, okay, sell it. Sell everything. So we developed a client base that included most of the bistros in the Sebastopol area, including K&L and Underwood and Willowwood, the Bistro des Copains in Occidental, and my mind is there's a couple of other places too, and then three.
So maybe it was Seaweed Cafe.
I'm sorry?
Seaweed Cafe?
No, we never got as far as Seaweed. I wanted to, that's a long drive.
Yeah, it is.
And I think she would probably have picked up things,
yeah.
But by the time we got to her, it was already coming to a point where we were, I had to go off and do performing. So so now, because of the fact that most of the produce goes to the French Garden, there's not really a lot to sell. And I also have been selling to a restaurant in Berkeley, in Emeryville called Bucci's, which they're old friends of mine, and so they've been getting stuff off and on as I can do it. But something that's true about farming is that it's very time consuming, particularly this large.
18 acres, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And we do have, I mean, we couldn't do it without our workers. And Dan has invented a number of ways to mechanize certain aspects of the process, including planting, seed planting. He developed a three-row vacuum seeder on the back of a Farmall tractor.
Well,
and,
don't have one of those.
And I wouldn't know how to use one if I did.
Yeah. Well, he went crazy with it at first because it was so easy and cool when he'd figured it out. And I think he planted about 2 miles of carrots. And that was one of the things he said, sell them, you know. Oh, have you ever seen 2 miles of carrots?
That's a lot of carrots.
That's a lot of carrots.
But it's a lot harder to pick it than to seed it, right?
That's true. That's the thing about smaller farms is that you can't afford all these big machines that dig things up and, you know, throw them in boxes and all that sort of thing. I don't even, you know, like most of the spring mix that's sold now is all, it's mowed.
Really?
They have these machines. They set up the beds very specifically and plant all along. And then they have these mowers that just go along and shoot the lettuce into boxes.
That sure takes the romance out of it.
Doesn't it?
Yes. Your but food, it's grown with love.
If you have to cut 25 pounds of spring mix by hand, that's a lot of work. That's why it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why it's so expensive. Mm-hmm.
Seems that it would be too fragile for that.
One would think.
Yeah.
Yep. But somehow they've managed to work it out.
That's interesting. I had no idea that they.
I mean, if you think about it, you can cut grass and, you know, shoot it into a bag.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ruin it. You know, if it sits there very long, of course it'll get all mashed down. But. Mm-hmm.
It actually explains a lot of the spring mix I've seen lately.
Yeah.
So that's we're going to take a little musical break here. Erling, why don't you tell us?
Sure. The track that we're going to play is from the Pontius Pilate opera that John mentioned that he was in 4 years ago. And John is a legit opera singer. I mean, he sings in big opera houses around the world, whereas I'm kind of an oddball opera composer. You know, you wouldn't see me at San Francisco Opera. They tend to be at small theaters. This was at ODC Theater in San Francisco. And it's kind of a strange story. And it's written in a lot of different languages. This section is actually in Latin. And he's playing the role of Pontius Pilate. He's singing one of Pontius Pilate's favorite poems, at least in our story, which is this work by Lucretius. But let's hear it.
You're listening to Mouthful. What else would it be? My guest this evening, Fiona LaPlace, John Dykers, and Erling Wold. These greens and potatoes and a little bit of butter with vegetable broth.
Vegetable broth, and also the secret ingredient is Jamaica Me Crazy.
Well,
you buy it in the grocery store. You know about that?
No.
Well, it's just, it's so refreshing and satisfying. Mm. Thank you so
Definitely.
Much.
Oh, you're welcome.
So much
really
for bringing
good.
It.
Potatoes are like tomatoes. The only way to use them, or to only, the best way to get the benefit out of them is to plant them and grow them yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I grew potatoes a couple of different times. And I used to dream about my potatoes. Mm. I would be underground, and I would be watching them grow from underground. And I was in the first year I grew them, I was really far away during harvest. I was in India, and I couldn't get to my potatoes. And it was so sad. That's when I started dreaming about them.
But they'll,
I went to a
they'll
potato
keep for you.
Festival. Well, the new potatoes, yeah. But when you taste them when they're new and they're just out of the ground,
sure.
it's
yeah.
a whole different
yeah.
thing. Yeah. And the potato festival I went to in the Salento, which is the lower, the southernmost part of Puglia, was amazing. It was close to the sea, but inland a bit. And they prepared potatoes in numerous ways, in every which way I loved.
What were some of the ways?
They did... they did a kind of potato pizza. It was potato that was sort of flattened out, the potato itself. It was mashed and then flattened, and then with their local olives and, of course, their fabulous Pugliese olive oil and a little tomato on it, and then they actually bake it.
So the potato actually forms the crust.
Forms the crust,
oh, that
yeah.
sounds really good.
That really stands out in my mind. But it was just a beautiful setting, too, in the middle of nowhere. And I remember the moon was absolutely terrifying. It was so gigantic and red. Huh. It was memorable. And there was a woman singing. There was some entertainment. And she was singing in some songs in the local dialect. It was just splendid.
How much time did you spend there?
Well, I was going there every summer
mm-hmm.
for, I would say, 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a trip coming up.
You do? When
yeah.
are you going?
In September.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I have a lot of friends there. I always go to the same place.
Mm-hmm. And how much time do you spend each time you go?
Well, in the past, I've spent most of the summer
mm-hmm.
when I've gone. And this time, with my new book out, I'm, on call for
right. yes.
various things. So,
I guess the book tour.
Yeah. So September will be a beautiful month
mm-hmm.
to go.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned going every summer. And one of the things that I noticed right away when I opened your book is that it's seasonal, of course, but it begins with summer. A lot of books don't necessarily begin with summer. So you begin with harvest already unfolding. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it was a feeling of really drawing people in.
Wanted to pull them in right away. Here, sit down at my table, eat from my garden.
Not to create any kind of stress or nervous feelings about growing things in your garden.
Mm-hmm.
And the beginning, it's divided into seasons, and I write descriptively of the garden and mm-hmm. what's growing in the garden. And I think, although it's not a gardening book, I do talk a little bit about how I created this particular garden. But the idea was just to go right into the garden mm-hmm. and start with, you know, a fabulous season and interesting produce that everyone could relate to and enjoy, and just a kind of a full kind of everything, the fullness of it.
Mm-hmm. One of the parts that I really loved was when you describe accidentally breaking or having in your hands the tomato branch.
Yes.
Would you talk about that tomato branch? I love this.
Well, I planted a lot of specific Italian varietals. And being relatively new to gardening, I didn't stake the tomatoes properly.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea that I would have such abundance and that this is so many tomatoes on a single branch. And I think one of the structures, one of the teepees that I had, this one particular, it was the Costoluto Genovese tomatoes, which I loved. And I was trying to raise the branch with, there must have been 12 tomatoes of a pretty good size on this one branch, to just gently raise it up and restake it. And it just split.
Yeah.
Hmm. Because of the weight, really, of the fruits, the tomatoes. And I just thought I was going to start sobbing, quite frankly.
It's a terrible feeling when that happens.
It was tragic. It felt tragic. And then I solemnly brought the branch up to the kitchen, and I just kept it there. And it turned into something of exquisite beauty that I just loved looking at. And then gradually they slightly ripened, and I actually was able to cut them and use them in salads. Mm-hmm. Often Italians use tomatoes that are just barely ripe for salads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they actually, some of them got used, and some of them were just kind of beautiful to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So I recovered. But I learned a valuable lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to stake tomatoes.
Yeah, I've done that before with tomato plants, where I'm lifting something and it just snaps.
Yeah. It's.
Do you have any advice for us, John?
Don't stake them.
Just let them.
What we do is we just, when we plant the tomatoes in the beds, we start everything in the greenhouse. Well, not everything, but we start the tomatoes in the greenhouse. And when they're, you know, when they're high enough in the pots, and when it's warm enough, we just make a bed and cover it with straw, a lot of straw, and then just plant into the straw. And there is some loss, because when the heirloom tomatoes, when they're touching the ground,
yeah,
if there's
right.
any dew on the ground or anything, even if you have straw, it will you know, destroy the tomatoes. But staking tomatoes, particularly if you have a lot of them, it's a lot of work. And sometimes I've found, like if you do the baskets,
mm-hmm.
It's really hard to get at the tomatoes when they get all, you know, tied up in that basket. And
mm-hmm.
it's,
me too.
So we don't stake them.
Oh,
we just, and you know, we've had that experience of you pick them up, and I know what you mean when you have this, you know, you're getting this tomato plant that's almost ready, and you pick it up and you know, it's like, oh, first of all, maybe it's just realizing that's one less tomato salad or tomato sauce that you can. But it's also about, you know, I feel I want everything to grow and thrive.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my climate, I absolutely have to have air circulation. So
yeah.
There are some other things that I would do next time. And because they really have to be above the ground, because there's a lot of humidity. So instead of staking, I'm going to have to build like a little pergola. then, not too high off the ground, but
you can build little stands for each tomato.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about having like putting a stake on each side of the row, and then along the row support stakes, and then having just lines of wire or something that go down, and
so
then
they can grow over it.
Yeah, they
way.
Could go over it
almost
that,
like what they do with a canopy management system for a grapevine,
right?
Yeah. Something mm-hmm. like that. So, John, I'm curious, how did you get into gardening? I mean, how did your two careers, what seems like simultaneous careers, opera right. singer, farmer?
I grew up in Butte, Montana, and my father was interested in the soil. He actually was the one that showed me how to dig with a shovel, and we started a garden in our backyard. And, of course, in Butte, Montana, the options are pretty limited. But I was determined to grow tomatoes, actually, which never have been able to grow tomatoes in Butte, Montana much.
Really?
And because it just cools off too quick, you know, in the fall for mm-hmm. them. But I somehow was lucky enough to choose a summer when we had a long warm fall, and I got tomatoes, and it was so exciting. I, you know, just growing things, watching things progress, and like these potatoes. When you were talking about hardly waiting to get back to the potatoes and thinking about them and so on, I've been away for 3.5 weeks now, and we just got on our way home. I was just, that was the thing I wanted to do, was dig up the potatoes. It's just so exciting. So anyway, that's where the hook on gardening started. And then when I moved to the Bay Area, I met actually Dan's wife. She had been a friend of mine for many years. And when she and Dan got married, they invited me to come up and visit them and my wife. And I just took to the house garden, which is about an acre and a half. Mm-hmm. It surrounds. Dan said he just had this dream of living in the middle of a garden, and I said, "Yeah, I want to do that." So we just started doing it, and we've terraced everything now, and most of that work I've done, and well, not most of it, but some of it anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's just an ongoing process, and the reward is so amazing to be able to have eat things out of your garden.
Mm-hmm. That is so true.
Yeah, and I have not been ill in any way, colds, anything like that, for about 3 years now, and that I think is parallel to eating more out of the garden, because not only do we feed our plants well, but the nutrition that's in the plants will, you know, it goes away after a while. If it's on, mm-hmm. it's on a shelf in a grocery store for 2 weeks, even if it's organic, it's going to lose a lot of its value. But we go and, you know, pick a romaine and have a Caesar salad.
It's incredible coming to visit you, just because, you know, to just take a walk in the afternoon, to walk over to the farm, to cut some things. I mean, obviously people have this experience all the time, but I'm such a city boy. I don't.
Yeah, it's really different for someone from the city.
Yeah. I mean, my uncle was a farmer, but he was like a barley farmer in New York. It wasn't quite the same as this mm-hmm. kind of walking out and just cutting what you need.
It really is a wonderful feeling. I mean, I know when people come to my home to visit, we always take a walk through the garden and mm-hmm. smell everything.
How big
everything.
Is your garden?
It's about 100 feet long and about 50 feet wide.
Mm. Oh, you can grow a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, a city garden. And there was a large European bay tree already there, so I was very lucky because I really... The Italians like to use fresh bay leaves, mm-hmm. and they're fabulous. So I had an endless supply of fresh bay leaves. But it's so true that now I feel sort of bereft if there's nothing in the garden at that moment to pick. Mm-hmm. And when I see other people's gardens that where there's absolutely nothing edible, not even a rosemary bush, I feel I feel sort of sad for them. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of, I feel they're impoverished in some way.
There's really nothing like going outside, picking something, and bringing it in and eating it immediately. Yep. It's just one of the most magically connective sort of things.
And a nice non-threatening way to begin is really with herbs, because many herbs are just so forgiving. I mean, mm-hmm. actually, they don't really require much attention. Lots of them don't really want to be watered very much.
A lot of them come back year after year after year, no matter right. what you do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you have.
And you can grow them in an apartment even if you. Yeah.
Yes, you can. You absolutely can. So that's a great way to start, and to just, you know, not get frustrated if you don't have land or you don't have. If you have shade, you can also grow things in the shade.
Oh, you can grow really great sorrel. I love being able to walk outside and pick sorrel. Sorrel is something that I don't think has made it into the marketplace in the form that it should. You find sorrel in the herb section and like six leaves for $3.79, mm-hmm. and I might go out and pick 20 leaves for a salad or 30 leaves for a sauce.
That's
right. I love having abundant sorrel. And during the summer, you do need shade for that.
Mm-hmm. And you can grow mint in mm-hmm. the shade, which is very nice. So I think that's a great way to get started.
Yeah.
And then you get those rewards and that wonderful, I mean, it gives you so much, because just smelling, stroking your hand along a branch of rosemary or a lemon verbena, which I have in the garden, that always sends me into some dreamland.
I think we should ask Erling for another musical break, and then I want to come back and talk about some of the recipes. And I want you to solve a mystery. I want to know if Simonetta is in the book, but don't tell us yet. Let's hear what we're going to, what the music's going to be.
Okay, this this next number, it's it's one movement, the slow, pretty movement from a clarinet concerto that I wrote for a friend of mine, Rachel Condry, and she's playing it. And it's the San Francisco Composers Chamber Orchestra and as the accompaniment.
Erling Wold is the composer of that piece, and we have him here in the studio. He's dishing up chard collards and potatoes. And what was the name of that piece?
Oh, it's called Brightness. It actually, it's actually based on a poem by a San Francisco poet about the death of his father. It's actually a really beautiful poem about him driving home from the hospice. Kind of sad poem, but
the music was beautiful.
Yeah, really.
Absolutely.
Really beautiful.
Just beautiful.
One of the things I really like about your writing, or I shouldn't say your writing, is one of the things I like about your writing is you have a really distinct voice. And
thank you.
You infuse it with a sense of place.
Thanks.
You know, and that's always one of my complaints about cookbooks. I get an awful lot of cookbooks that come across my desk. Anybody who writes does. Everyone who writes for magazines or newspapers or anything. And so many of them are really pretty generic in their voice. And you can maybe tell from the style of food the time and place, but there's not an author's voice, and there's not a physical sense of place, and you are the exact opposite of that. No one could write your books but you.
Thank you.
And that's really, that's a real compliment from me. Unplugged Kitchen is, I think all of them, there's an elemental quality. Maybe you'll have two ingredients. And one of the things I refer to, if I don't know what to cook, if I'm having a hard day or a hard week, hot rice with cold lemon. It's one of my favorite things in the world. And it's what? Boiled rice drained with cold lemon juice, some salt, maybe some pepper. And if I happen to have a little olive oil, and if I happen to have some herbs around, I might put the herbs around. But it's just one of the most deliciously soothing dishes. And I notice in my Italian garden, there's a lot of very, very simple, really elemental recipes. How did you decide? What was your inspiration for choosing the recipes?
Well, I think just from the very beginning when I started writing cookbooks, I think that the books are, although they are cookbooks, they come out of a certain place in me that has to do with being Italian, of my feelings about Italy, of having gone there when I was 12 for the first time, of my mother's Italian friends coming over. The books really are almost an exploration of the Italian in me. And my background is in art and fine art. And I come to it this not as someone who is trying to master the techniques of professional cooking, but someone who's trying to tap into a taste that is a memory or that creates a feeling that sort of vibrates in a certain way. And that's really what I try to get across in the books. I think it's the feeling that comes first.
And I think that you definitely succeed in doing that. Absolutely. There's no question. Not to me anyway. I want to look at some of the summer recipes. And let's see, what did I mark here? Oh, I loved this. Hard-cooked eggs wrapped in giant basil leaves.
That's right.
That just said to talk about that.
Well, that is a lot. A very good example of my philosophy. There's a kind of basil leaf that's quite large, and I like just having the two flavors come together. I like the idea of it. I like the look of it.
And
it's a neat little package, and yet it's full of flavor. It's
and
fresh.
Those giant basil leaves, they have a different texture than, say, the basil that you're going to use to make pesto. And those giant leaves don't make good pesto.
No, they really don't. And so this is a great way to use them.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really a brilliant thing to do with
Thank
it.
Thank you.
I've heard other people talk about using them as wraps for various sorts of, I mean, even some Thai wraps, that sort of thing. But wrapping a hard-cooked egg, I think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
Okay, so I noticed that you do a lot with fresh ricotta. No surprise, since if you spend any time in Italy or Sicily.
Ricotta. I love that kind of freshness, and it's a great source of protein.
What type of, or what brand of fresh ricotta do you like here in the North Bay?
I found that, you know, you have to go with the whole milk ricotta. Absolutely. Don't ever buy the low fat or whatever. It's incredibly granular, and it has absolutely no connection to true ricotta.
No, no.
There's almost no particular ricotta that I can recommend as equivalent to Italian ricotta. But having said that, I have found one that I like. It's organic, and I absolutely can't remember what the brand is.
Do you remember where it's made?
I think it's made locally.
Because there's the one, there's Bellwether Farms.
It's not Bellwether Farms.
Because Bellwether, if you call them directly, and let's just say if things work out, Mm-hmm. You can get there. I think it's 3 pounds. I'm not sure, but it comes in the basket mold.
Mm, how wonderful.
And they'll just deliver it to you, or you can arrange to meet them in a gas station somewhere, you know, down the back road.
Midnight, yeah.
And cash only.
It's the best ricotta I've managed to find, and the freshest ricotta I've managed to find. I mean, when I went to Sicily for the, I don't know if I've seen you since I did go to Sicily for the first time. I kissed the ground. The ricotta was astonishing.
It's made
absolutely
from the whey. I mean, it's
it was
a different,
just astonishing.
So it has a different texture. They use sheep's milk, mm-hmm. so it has a tang, kind of a lemony tang.
And they also salt it. Mm-hmm. And that salt, I had a cannoli that was made with this, mm-hmm. with Sicilian ricotta. Oh, my God. And I'm not even much of a sweets person. This cannoli, and I had one bite. I declined dessert, and one of the people that was on the tour with me, it was a press trip, he said, we can just share the cannoli. I know we're all really full, so we'll just share it. So they bring the cannoli, and because I haven't wanted it, this is the seventh day, I haven't wanted a dessert.
Right.
And he breaks it in half, and one side is smaller. It's like, oh, give me the small side. And I took a bite, and I closed my eyes. So it was so good. And I opened my eyes to ask for another bite, and it was gone. And there was no getting any more out of the kitchen. But it was, I think, but to a very large degree, it was the extraordinary texture,
mm-hmm,
and flavor
the texture
of that local sheep's milk, yeah, ricotta.
It's quite wonderful. There is a company in Southern California called Gioia, and they make wonderful burrata, which is, mm-hmm, another fresh,
getting more and more popular
cheese. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a recipe for burrata with wild arugula, which I found was growing wild all over Puglia, and I just started to not be able to live without it. So I grew it from Italian seed, mm-hmm, and it self-sows. So
now, I always think of wild arugula as being a colder climate thing, but Puglia is really hot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Puglia, really, it's just olive groves, and then it's the sea on both sides, because it's a little peninsula within a peninsula. And so you can't really drive too far in any direction without running into the sea, which is quite spectacular. And it's just olive groves, mm-hmm, olive groves. It's just
and then wild arugula.
And wild arugula. And purslane. Another, by the way, at the potato festival, another dish that was just, you know, I loved it so, was a Italian-style potato salad. And those potatoes were yellow-fleshed and really flavorful. Italians season their potato salad with olive oil and vinegar. And this had a little bit of tomato in it, the local capers that grow wild there that were cured. Tomato, chopped arugula, wild arugula, and chopped purslane.
Mm. Mm. Oh, that sounds really good.
And purslane is another wild herb that is so incredibly good for you. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking for it in our garden when I was growing up in Southern California, because it would grow there, mm-hmm, with the heat. I love it.
We can provide you with a lot of purslane.
Oh, really?
Great.
Oh, that's good.
I would love that.
And there's a couple people, at least one in particular, there were two for a while, who sell it at the Sebastopol Farmers Market.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you can, for about 3 years now, you've been able to get purslane.
It's fabulous in salads. You can cook it too, but I just love it chopped up with tomatoes, just on its own, mm-hmm, as a salad.
It will also take over the garden.
Yes.
It's very aggressive.
And if you live in West County and have as many gophers as I have, mm-hmm, that's kind of a nice thing. You want something good that will take over.
Yeah, I kind of like things that are a little aggressive. Yes. Like right now, the borage is just blooming. I've got beautiful blue blossoms everywhere, and I can cook the leaves, and the little blossoms can go into salads.
Yeah, and I love the
cucumber
leaves.
Flavor.
That cucumber flavor. It's really refreshing.
It's
That's
fabulous.
One thing that that we do at French Garden is use the borage flowers and, mm-hmm, and salads.
But yeah, the leaf, actually, the tender leaf can be cooked as a green.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that can go into salads as well, the really tender
very
ones.
Very tender.
Yeah. Now, the book is titled My Italian Garden, More Than 125 Seasonal Recipes from a Garden Inspired by Italy. I should say it is from Broadway Books. For somebody who thinks, oh, I can't garden, I'm not going to garden, how is the book useful to them?
The book isn't really about the garden and having to create your own garden. It's really kind of a state of mind, as I've talked about. Mm-hmm. And I think you can read the book as a book. You can simply read it because there's quite a bit of writing, personal experiences.
Yeah, it is very, yeah, it's a good read.
Thank you. Experiences in the garden, creating the garden. It's funny. Funny things happen. There are people who come in and out of the garden, and I think I am just really, because again, it's coming from my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. I feel that people don't have to be literal in their having to actually grow everything I've grown. This has been a personal choice to grow these particular things. But you can, anyone can have a garden. Mine happens to be Italian. But as I said, it really is a feeling of just being transported into another world of nature, really.
And the recipes will work as long as you have access to someone else's garden, perhaps by way of the farmer's market.
Exactly. Yeah. And also I've given some substitutions for things that are that I wouldn't be able to find anywhere myself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very doable, actually. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to create the garden. It's more, as I said, a state of mind.
Yeah, and you can create the feeling of the season, the feeling of that connection with nature in a lot of ways that, I mean, even if you live in New York and you have, you know, what, you know, a stairs outside, fire escape outside, you can put three plants out there and have basil in the summer and maybe a cherry tomato plant.
That's so true.
And you can even have a container with wild arugula, cut it with a pair of scissors. And
that's right.
It'll keep, so, you know, that connection with nature is possible even if you don't have,
and I think
you
when
know,
you
100
prepare
feet.
The recipes, and if you've read about the experience, it just creates, you have a greater connection to what you're cooking and when you're actually sitting down to enjoy it.
Now, John, you're in town for, are you going back on the road? Who are you going with?
Well, let's see. The next thing I'm doing actually is I'm doing a cabaret event on the 8th of July in the tent at Person Theater to sort of a prelude to the Green Festival event evening. And then
what will you be doing?
Well, I don't know yet.
Okay, and that's fair enough.
I think it's going to be sort of focused on viol songs, but I might also do. There's a song from Secret Garden called A Bit of Earth that Archie sings, Archie Craven. And so I might do that. It's one of the possibilities. I haven't decided yet.
And does it look like Be Happy Garden is going to only be able to fulfill the needs of French Garden Restaurant?
It seems like that's the case in the short term. Mm-hmm. And the other big thing that's happened in my life now is that I've taken an artist teacher position at the University of Miami in Florida.
Oh, wow.
So we'll be commuting back and forth. This piece that Erling and I are doing now will be premiered in San Francisco at the San Francisco International Arts Festival next May.
And that was going to be my next question.
Right. So I'll be coming back and forth for rehearsals for that.
And what's it called?
Well, it's called Mordake right
Wait,
now.
That's right, Mordake.
Yeah. But we also want to bring it up here. One of the things that we're working on is starting a sort of a, well, I'm calling it the Edge of the Bay. But that's tentative.
And if somebody, Mordake, let's just spell it in case people.
Mordake.
Mordake. Yeah. And if people want to stay up on this, get information, is there a website?
If you go to my website, which is Erlingwold, and I'll spell that, it's ERLINGWOLD.com.
Perfect. Erlingwold.com will get you information about
this
and your other projects.
Yeah, and I'll keep that up to date. And yes.
Excellent. Well, it was such a treat. I mean, it's a multi-layered treat to have the food you brought and to have the composer here in the studio. So thanks very much to both of you. And now, Fiona, you...
I wanted to just add one thing. I wanted to thank my illustrator, Cindy Salins Rosenheim, who came into my garden on many, many occasions and produced all the beautiful full-color watercolors.
They're really wonderful.
Throughout
really
the
evocative.
Book. There are 50 of them, and you will feel like you're in the garden when you thumb through the book. Lots of luscious colors and feeling that come from those illustrations.
Well, thank you.
I want to thank her.
And thank you for coming back for your third visit. I look forward to the next one, Vienna.
I do, too.
And congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
And I will see you not next week. Then we'll be, mouthful will be, what's that word? Well, we're going to be replaced by the Kitchen Sisters next week for a special, and I'll be taking the weekend off, a rare thing. So meet me back here 2 weeks from tonight on A Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
So hungry, old one started feeling ill, and the weak one started passing out, and the young ones, they could not sit still, and the preacher's voice rose high. I snuck up to the balcony and I crept into the choir. And I begged them, brothers, sisters, help me please. I said, when I give you a signal, I said, when I raise up my hands, won't you please join with me together? And praise the Lord, I have a plan. And the preacher, he kept preaching. Long is the struggle, hard to fight. And I prayed, Father, please forgive me. And then I stood up, and with all my might, I sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthfuls@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Every woman, a child and man, I sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. Now listen to what the